Back here on the Giants pregame show, Bill Lasky, Marty Lurie, and Kerry Crowley with you. And it's my pleasure to welcome in our next guest, the host of the Leadoff Spot, my co-host on the Copes and Crowley podcast, Adam Copeland. He doesn't answer texts, but folks, he picked up the phone this morning. Adam, how are you, sir?
Kerry, are you airing out our dirty laundry on the air now, dude? This is how this is going to go down. I come on for a nice little baseball conversation on a Sunday, and you railroad me, dude, with our nonsense from off air.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's fair these days. After the criticism I was subjected to this week from Murph and Mac for not showing up to the studio with donuts, I think it's only fair that that we continue this conversation like this.
Yeah, well, it's like when you go to somebody's house for dinner, you got to bring a bottle of wine. Or as George Costanza says, he doesn't even drink wine. He'd like to bring a bottle of Pepsi. But I guess that's not appropriate to bring to someone's house when you go to dinner. So donuts will have to suffice for Murph and Mac.
And let's get to the baseball, though. Giants 37-21, three consecutive victories over a Chicago Cubs team that showed up red hot in San Francisco. Giants have obviously proved a lot this weekend, Copes, but on Sunday morning, a real crushing blow. Evan Longoria, left shoulder sprain. He's going to miss the next 4 to 6 weeks. This is a guy who was playing like an all-star for the first time since 2010. And when he goes down, it's a little bit more significant than the 14 other injuries the Giants have dealt with this season.
Yeah, but what a headache that ninth inning was yesterday, right? It got really dicey for the Giants. A couple of mistakes by Devon, and then it ends with an error there. I guess it was an error and an injury to Evan Longoria. That was frustrating and kind of concerning in the moment. He went down pretty hard. I thought maybe he had a concussion, and then it's a shoulder strain, which is tough to deal with. He lands on the injured list, as you said, Kerry. So, it's funny with Farhan here and with Scott Harris and what they've done. And I read Andy Baggerly's piece yesterday in The Athletic about Scott Harris being really excited about the depth within the organization. And I guess what the Giants have done is I don't think anybody thought they'd have to deal with this number of injuries to this point in the season, but Farhan has done such a good job of embedding flexibility within the roster. And I'm talking the 40-man roster to guys who are not on the 40-man roster, but in AAA with the opportunity to come up and keeping the flexibility that he has with guys who have options. We didn't understand when he first got here about all the acquisitions he was making, but it was about being able to sort of cover yourself when a situation like this happens. Now, again, I don't think the Giants wanted to have to deal with 14 different injuries, have to go to Chadwick Tromp, even though he came up with a big knock yesterday. They planned on Curtis Alley being here and being the backup for Buster Posey. So you run into some situations like this throughout a season where you hope your team can weather the storm. I just don't think anybody was under the impression the Giants were going to be able to weather the storm in the fashion that they have. And I think the other part of this is guys buying in. When you find success with a strategy you've implemented and you start to see the benefits of it. Brandon Crawford's a great example. Lamont Wade giving an opportunity to first base. We're now seeing guys like Dickerson and Austin Slater go back over there before ball games and work on ground balls there. Guys are buying in because they know the team needs it, and because the team is playing so well, I think guys are on board with doing more. They're understanding that they have to play more positions to get themselves into the lineup. And so you got to give credit to Gabe Kapler. You got to give credit to the coaching staff, but this all comes back to roster flexibility, and I think Farhan and Scott have done an incredible job with that.
Well, you hit it right on the head. The Giants replacement for Evan Longoria on Sunday, taking his spot on the roster, is Tyro Estrada, who the Giants acquired at the beginning of the regular season. He was DFA'd by the New York Yankees. Gabe Kapler mentioned on Sunday morning he plays shortstop, second base, third base, left field, right field. So clearly behind these frontline starters like an Evan Longoria and a Brandon Crawford, who both play just one position, the Giants have prioritized that positional versatility and flexibility, and Estrada a key example of that. The guy's mashing the ball down in AAA, OPS over 1,000, and so the Giants hope that they won't miss Evan Longoria too much, but Estrada's got a tall task ahead of him considering the caliber of play that Longoria was providing this club.
Yeah, and you look across the roster and you look at a guy like, Mauricio Dubon, who I think at the outset of the Cactus League this year, we were thinking, okay, this guy's going to be most every day the center fielder. He's played more infield than he's played outfield, and it's been great for the Giants because they were able to acquire a guy like Mike Tauchman who can play all three outfield positions. There are very few guys on the roster, if any. I guess a couple that come to mind would be Buster Posey. Evan Longoria really only played third base when he was healthy. Brandon Belt's only playing first, and then Brandon Crawford's playing shortstop. Outside of those four, and then I guess like Kurt Casale, who's obviously just a catcher, outside of those four, there's not a single guy on the roster I think about who does not play multiple positions or who can't help out elsewhere. And that's why it seems like every night Gabe Kapler is using all of his roster. And this is modern day baseball. We were just so lucky to have Bruce Bochy, a Hall of Fame manager, for so long, and to have a guy who has the ability to push the right buttons and to manage a team between the lines and between the ears is fantastic. But we were behind the curve, I think, as far as Giants fans go, when thinking about roster flexibility and versatility. And why would you only use nine guys in a game when you could use your entire roster? If you could go to different guys for different situations, and not just bullpen arms, but we're seeing them reap the benefits of this from a pinch hitting standpoint, right? Seven pinch hit home runs, I think 21 pinch hit RBIs entering yesterday's ball game. We're both first in all of baseball, not just the National League. So because they've been able to find guys who can put together strong at bats, grind out at bats deep into an at bat, run up a pitch count on an opposing starter. We saw it the other night, staying aggressive against a guy like Jake Arrieta early in the game and getting their pitch deep into the count, and they were able to knock him out of the ballgame early. So it's been fun to watch. It's been really exciting. And for a team that sort of lacked that superstar element coming into the season, they've done an incredible job of picking up the slack when guys go down.
Chatting with Adam Copeland here on the Giants pregame show. Giants, Cubs, these are always matchups I look forward to. Maybe it's just because these are two of the premier franchises in baseball, but I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about any Giants Cubs memories you have from growing up and watching these two teams go at it. You know, one of the first guys who comes to my mind, Copes, when I think of these two clubs, Dusty Baker, great manager for both clubs, and now with the Houston Astros still kicking down with that Astros club. Anyone that just stands out to you from this matchup between the Giants and the Cubs through the years?
Well, there's some great ones. I mean, you go back to, you know, Will Clark reading the fastball lips of Greg Maddux and hitting the ball. Was it Waveland Avenue or Sheffield Avenue?
Yeah.
I can't remember which way the streets run out there, but he hits the ball out to right field, the home run. I think it was a grand slam. That was a big one. But the one that comes to mind for me, and this is what I've talked to you about, when we talk Randy Johnson's perfect game, I always sort of poo-poo it or thumb my nose at the Randy Johnson perfect game, because that same night, Jason Schmidt threw a one-hitter complete game shutout in Chicago at Wrigley Field. And I think Felipe Alou ran him out there for like 135, 140 pitches, something like that. And as a kid, I was like, all right, if my team does something big that's worth national attention, and I love Jason Schmidt, I thought he should be getting Cy Young nods, especially the year that Eric Gagne won it as a reliever. That really infuriated me as a young Giants fan. It infuriated me more that I thought Jason Schmidt was going to get some love on SportsCenter or on Baseball Tonight, one of the national broadcasts. And then instead, here comes Randy Johnson, perfect game. I want to see he threw it against the Braves or something. But it happened simultaneous to when Jason Schmidt was throwing his one-hitter. So Jason Schmidt took second billing that night, got no love. But I always thought of that as a pretty good moment for the Giants. And as a kid, that was a fun memory for me. So Giants, Cubs, yeah, the classic National League franchises, it seems like. You've got more history there, obviously, but some great moments, and that's one that comes to mind for me.
And I know that the Cubs won the 2016 World Series, and several pieces of that core are still here. But when I think about this franchise, and I think about the early 2000s and Dusty Baker, like I mentioned, the Steve Bartman game still jumps out to me, Copes. All these years later, they had the ESPN documentary about it. And I think that my perspective has shifted a little. I felt so bad for the guy now, much more than I did in the moment, you know, thinking as a baseball fan, you know, you can't reach over, but just putting yourself in those shoes. That's just one of those iconic memories from my youth that I think will stick with me forever as we continue to cover this sport and talk about this sport of Steve Bartman reaching over.
Yeah, and like, I mean, it's so tough, because did he reach over?
That's true.
He was like, he barely, I mean, it's so tough. And all the people around him, who, I think that the documentary is called Catching Hell, for anybody who hasn't seen that 30 for 30. It's a really, really good documentary. Steve Bartman's still not in it. He's not somebody who really wants to talk about. You do feel bad for that guy. You think about, this guy might have been a diehard Cubs fan, was a diehard Cubs fan, and would never have wanted to keep the Cubs from an opportunity like that. And I think people forget, next pitch or the next hitter, I think ground ball right through Alex Gonzalez, the shortstop. Like, there are a whole bunch of factors that go into winning a baseball game. However, there are moments like that throughout history where it seems as though the team, the pitcher, the manager, the fans, whatever happens, one play people focus on, because baseball is such a snowball game, right? A domino falls and then another domino falls. It's kind of like what we were talking about with the ninth inning last night. It was like, boy, the first mistake by Dubon on the transfer on the ground ball into shallow right field, and then you're like, okay, no big deal. And then it happens again on a potential double play attempt at second. Then you start thinking about the first play, and you go, we're only in this situation because of that one mistake. So if Moises Alou does catch that ball, and by the way, if he does, that's a pretty great play. Like, that's a tough play to make. He's like reaching over into the stands up against that wall there at Wrigley Field. So yeah, that's a play that definitely comes to mind, I think, always when you think Chicago Cubs. And you think about that pitching staff, man. It was like Matt Clement and Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor, some of of the great starters of the early 2000s, and then they sort of parlayed that into Ryan Dempster, and they had a great run there with Derek Lee. Kosuke Fukudome, the right fielder, I think, made an all-star game. So there were some fun Cubs teams in the early 2000s, I thought.
Yeah, nobody remembers some guys better than you. That's incredible knowledge of the early 2000s Cubs. One more before we let you go. I do want to mention that ninth inning one more time from yesterday, because it feels like when Tyler Rogers is on the mound, everything is a softly hit ground ball, and there's so much randomness. And this guy has now gotten through a few great saves. The one in Arizona where the bases were loaded and one out, one yesterday where it just felt like the Cubs had so much momentum after the Mauricio Dubon mistakes. Tyler Rogers just never seems fazed by the randomness and the awkward plays that can be induced by his particular style of pitching.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I actually thought that exact same thing last night. I think that, and it's not just that everything that is hit off of him is a slow roller. It's like a slow roller right back to him where he's leaning a weird way. And so it seems like it's between the shortstop and the second baseman to make a decision on who makes a play on it. We saw that last night. That's why Evan Longoria ends up injured, because he tried to get to a ball that I think generally the shortstop says, all right, third baseman, get to wherever you can. And he and Brandon Crawford just collided. It's tough to say somebody should have called it or anything on a ground ball like that. But you're right. There's so much randomness that happens. And it's funny because I think, you know, most players, and I know there's that old saying that's a pop fly is the most exciting play. Not the most exciting. It's like one of the most difficult plays in baseball to judge, because especially one on the infield, it's so high up there. A lot of times the sun comes into play. When Tyler Rogers is on the mound and the Giants are in like a bit of a shift to the right side, maybe for a left-handed hitter, a slow tapper up the middle towards shortstop might be the most exciting play in baseball, or the most confusing play in baseball, especially with runners on. And they ran into that yesterday. So good work by him, by the way. Was it Contreras he was able to strike out? Mm-hmm. He gets to whiff on a slider. That was a huge strikeout right in the middle of that inning. And I think we should give Gabe Kapler some credit. I was talking about this a little bit yesterday. Two nights ago, he sort of went the other way, where he did go Jake McGee in the eighth back-to-back days here, but he had Jake McGee face Javi Baez on Friday night in a situation where Javi Baez is facing all fastballs. He's one of the worst hitters in the National League this season against the fastball. He's one of the best against off speed. I think he's top five in all the baseball and hits off of off speed pitches. And we saw that last night with a base hit against Tyler Rogers. It just happened to be the situation after the error. But anyway, it was a difficult ninth inning to get through and to navigate, but I'm liking Tyler Rogers in the ninth.
Tyler Rogers, potential Gold Glove Award winner out of the bullpen. Adam Copeland, thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate your time.
Always fun, dude. Catch you later, Kerry.
All right, more coming up on this Giants pregame show. Bill will take you the rest of the way. You're listening to KBR 104.5, 680, the sports leader.